Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! Mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrills the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
We may lose, but we have Mike Sims in our corner to help us out with our intro today, folks, on Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your host, Ray Guarino, and Chris Switzer. Chris, you're grooving, brother. You're grooving.
Hey, I'm just, like, admiring those polyester pants and those platform shoes you got on. That Kiana shirt is just, like, smashing.
There you go.
Whoa. What? Watch those puka beads you're wearing. Don't chip a tooth.
Back in love again with cars. That's what we're in love with today. So we're going to continue on with our fine tradition of talking with ourselves. And we'll hash out some of our common car problems that we share.
That's right. This Motormouth Radio program, the show that mom and dad always warned you that it will pluck your eye out.
Yeah,
right
something.
Here. And since we're talking to ourselves, I could throw out the number. 516-572-7440 is the phone number to get a hold of us right here at Motormouth Radio.
Yes, sir. And follow us on social media. On the internet, we have a website, motormouthradio.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook, which is Motormouth Radio, and Instagram, which is Joe's favorite. It's Motormouth, it's real underscore Motormouth Radio. Yeah.
Yes.
I forgot for a minute.
No. Just like the thing we do at the bottom of the hour.
Exactly. I just put up some cool swag, some stuff I got from our good friend Macro Man Brian yesterday. Put an order in with him a while ago, and it comes in pieces. So it's good because I always have something to look forward to, which is great.
Wait a minute. Do the parts come in pieces? Do the tools come in pieces? Or
no, they're whole. But
you get a ratchet or something in four different sections, cut up like a slice of bologna.
Funny you should mention. I did get a ratchet. I had bought a while
you
ago.
Did.
Yeah, I had picked up a. I needed some quarter inch sockets. I had an American set that I used for a long time, and I never really got a good metric set of quarter inch. So they have – Matco has a secondary line, kind of like Snap-on has Blue Point, which was actually the original brand. Matco has Silver Eagle. It's a secondary line. So I said, yeah, that would be good. And Brian said, hey, Father's Day, we got a special on this set. It's quarter inch, metric and American, shallow deep, comes with a ratchet, comes with a bit driver set, socket extension, universal. Okay, I'll take that. I used it, and I had to get in touch with him. I said, you know what? I don't like this ratchet. It's a smaller quarter inch ratchet, but it actually jammed up on me at one point. I said, I don't like this.
Ray, I think we've totally figured out, walking through Englishtown, there is no single good quality quarter inch ratchet drive. I'm sorry. I haven't found one yet.
Well, I disagree. The major tool guys, have some really, really good ratchets. Of course, Snap-on, Matco, Mac, even Gear Wrench has some nice stuff. So
well, I haven't seen them, but okay, I'm with you on this.
So I said to them, listen, just send me a quarter inch drive ratchet, and I like the new ones. It's a flex head that locks, so you can lock it into any one of 180 degrees position. And
I love a locking flex head there.
Yeah.
Right? Sounds good.
Right, and then he told me, he says, well, it may not fit in the spot in the case, in the box. And it's a little bit longer, so it doesn't. So I said, that's
now,
okay.
You need a flex head that'll fit in the box.
Yeah, I know.
You need that.
I know. Well, I put it in my toolbox with my, I let it mingle with my other ratchets. So, and this great. One is superb. This Matco ratchet is, Matco makes some really, really good ratchets, I gotta say. Very, very
okay.
Nice. They're all like, you know, 92, 98 teeth. They're, you know, very fine tooth like everybody else. But the actuation right. and the way you, the feel of them is very, very nice. So, yeah, that came in and I was very happy. Yeah.
But the quarter-inch drive ratchet was not up to par.
The one that came in the kit wasn't, but it's not a Matco. It was a Silver Eagle.
Ah, see, it's that, okay.
It's the secondary brand, and I wasn't. And Brian Tomey says, yeah, you know, a lot of people complain about the same thing. They don't like that the ratchets that come with those kits. So I said,
so
okay.
I guess the Silver Eagle is the economy brand for those price conscious individuals.
I guess you could say, like I said, like it's like Blue Point is to Snap-on.
Okay.
You know, it's
okay.
that secondary brand. You know, and yeah, the price point I think is a little less than the main line. But for what I was going to do with the stuff, that didn't matter. That was fine for me. And so now I'm fine because I got the right ratchet. If it you know feels great, yeah. I used it already. I took it to the shop and I used it on the. I had to put the lower panels on the Grand National and all those little quarter inch screws and all. I had to put them in, so I used it on that, and it's very nice,
very cool.
Passed my
test. It's and it didn't have. I had 7 or 8 individual sockets that were of 9 millimeter that no one uses at all, like my set does.
Yeah, 9 is one. Yeah, you know, there's a couple that don't get used.
9.
Yeah.
Who uses 9? Who uses 11? Who uses 11 millimeter? Is there other than like some sort of crazy Wentworth size bolt, is there an 11 millimeter anything?
I don't know.
I did not get to see it. 10s and 12s.
Yeah.
10s, 12s. 10s and 12s, you could take apart any Toyota Corolla in the mid-70s. 10s and 12s.
Well, you may need a 15 and a 17 when you get some of the
maybe.
Bigger stuff.
But
I will say this. It's like the American stuff, too. Sometimes you just find a fastener that it's supposed to be like a 10 or a 12 or whatever, and those sockets just don't – the fastener is messed up. So maybe that 11 will go on there sometimes. If
maybe.
It was, yeah, if you got a 10 with a little bit of crust on it, yeah, an 11 may work. I really haven't come across that myself. I can't say that I have, but.
I'm thinking about how many times I've grabbed that 11 millimeter wrench and went, this is perfect. I need this. I've moved it out of the way more times than I can count.
Right.
And a 9 millimeter socket, forget. I've used 8s. I've used 7s and even as small as 6 millimeter sockets to do jobs. But 9s, for some reason, stay in a box.
Have you seen?
They stay attached to the, you know, those sets that you get that usually the sockets end up in all different places, but that one lonely 9 millimeter sits right in there.
Have you seen the sets? A lot of times it's like a 5.5 millimeter.
Yes, I have one.
Now, I haven't used that, but I understand the guys that do a lot of dash stuff on the newer cars, they do use that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I have one. Yeah. I look at it. I keep thinking, what's a 55?
Right.
Oh, no, wait, it's a 5.5.
I'll tell you what else is common now, and I see this at the shop because I see, I see this with the bumper jobs. Those super, super deep sockets are getting pretty popular. But you know what? Let's, all right. Nope, I was going to go to the phone, but the phone went away. And by super deep, I mean they made these sockets that are like 3 inches deep. There's nuts on these bumpers that you have to get from behind, and like on a lot of the BMWs and the newer foreign cars, and they're on a stud that's long, and you need like a 3-inch socket. Well, Derek at the shop the other day called me over a couple weeks ago and said, listen, he goes, look, my 3-inch socket, you put it over the stud, and the stud poked out of the end of the socket. So I took a picture and I sent it to Brian. I said, now what do you do?
Now what do you do?
They make a longer socket, but we're going to put our socket on the phone here, and we'll go to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Christian, what's happening?
What's up,
my brother? What's up?
Oh, this and that. How come you're not out at the Honeybee Festival?
Oh, you went to that? Yeah.
No, I didn't go. I was like, but I knew you would.
Oh, no. I got quite the festival going on in my hive out back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm just picturing Christian
busy.
in the bee uniform with the antlers.
Oh, yeah.
Go
actually,
buzz,
no. Allison takes care of it. I usually kind of let her take care of it. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yes, I believe it is.
But you know what drives me crazy?
No.
10, 12, 14, and then the 17.
Yeah. Well,
it's not 16. It's not 18.
Right. You know what grinds my gears, though?
What's that?
I'll tell you what grinds my gears. So, you know, all the years I've worked, well, besides I'm standard at metric, but all the years you deal with a 10, 12, and a 14 on a bike, or the 8s, obviously.
Sure.
And then someone works on a bike, and then they change the hardware over, but they buy the hardware from, like, Linzer or Worth or something like that.
Right.
And then metric bolts will be 11s, 13s.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I've seen that where the shaft, where the thread is the same, but they change the head size sometimes. Yes.
The head size drives me nuts.
Right, right.
It drives me absolutely. No, I'm serious. I lose it because.
Christian, don't work on anything I own, then.
No. But, you know, Christian, I'm sure you find this, that you get trained to know, like, if I'm going to take a brake caliper bracket off of a Japanese car, I go for my 17-millimeter socket and my half-inch.
Sure.
I know.
Lay it all out. No, yeah, lay it all out. Yeah, I'm not the type of guy that's supposed to bucket on the floor and just grab stuff. No. You know, it's like I grab my 10, my 12, my 14, and I start a job.
Right, right.
If I have to walk 10 steps back to my toolbox to get the 13 because out of, you know, couple hundred pieces of hardware on a bike, and there's one 13 head on there because they changed that out
right.
and bought the bolt out of hardware. So,
Christian, I know you can do this because I can do this. Can you look at a bolt head and know what size it is 99% of the time?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. You could just grab it with your index finger and your thumb. You just grab it and just go, yeah, that's a 13.
Right.
And look at the threads, too. You can tell the difference.
Yeah.
You know, a stand and a thread.
You can learn it. I can do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's muscle memory. Yeah, no, it's definitely it's a mental muscle memory thing. But
I think I've learned this, and I think I told you this. My index finger fits in a half-inch socket. And then you just go from there.
All right.
Yeah, when the shop is a million degrees the past couple of weeks, you know, it has been all those times where I'm looking at stuff and I'm like, I can't tell if it's a 10 or an 11, you know, because I'm like, I got sweat in my eyes I can't see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it's amazing because even different brands of different product or manufacturers, I'm sorry, will use different hardware too. So like in Italy, they'll have hardware that has like a torque. So I have like a T27 internal with an 8mm external hex.
Oh, wow.
So
both.
You have you have like a dual thing there, which is nice.
Yeah, I have a tool for that. It's called a vice grip.
No, you know where I see that? I've seen on appliances like washing machines and things like where it's usually a sheet metal type screw, but it has a hex and a Torx on it. That's where I've seen
The hex and a Torx is very common with the Austrian bikes, like the KTMs and stuff like that, and Ducatis. But, you know, Japanese has been very consistent. 8, 10, 12, 14, 17. And then you'll go to a 22. Oh, no, you have your 19 and then 22. And then from 22, you'll see 24. And then you'll go 30, 32.
Yeah.
Never use a 34-millimeter socket until the other day I actually had to use it. I had something that was 34-millimeter, and it was a fork cap on a motorcycle fork.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you buy a row of sockets, you buy a 30 to 36. The 36, the 32, and the 30 is most commonly. Your 35, your 34 is like, it doesn't even have any, you know.
Yeah.
I got to use my 34 the other day. I was like, hey!
Right. Get my money's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
I should have plugged that. I should have plugged Macro. It was my Macro set. You know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, I use the 32 millimeter to pull a flywheel off the back of a rotary motor. RX3.
32 is very common for Japanese axle nuts on the front.
Absolutely.
That's your 32 right there.
Yeah. And then as far as Allen's, you know, it's usually four.
Well, five is
six.
Very popular.
You'll get four, five, and six,
Eight,
so
10.
Like an 8. A 5.8 pitch Allen will use a 4mm, and then a 6x1 will use a 5, and then an 8125 will use a 6mm Allen. And then you get an Italian bike in, it's got a 8125, but it's a 7mm Allen.
Oh, wow.
See what happens? I've had that.
You need the Allen wrench that you actually put together IKEA furniture with, right? That's usually the one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That stuff is killer. That you look at the way they do that stuff over there. It's amazing.
And I'll tell you, Macroman just told me that the new Toyota axles are 39 millimeters.
Oh, my gosh.
That's weird.
So, yeah,
very strange.
Put your whole fist in that one.
Holy right.
Which is weird because Honda motorcycles will use a 29-millimeter 12-point on a clutch hub, or Ducati uses a 32-millimeter 12-point on their axle nuts. And you know what that's like when you got to try and hunt one of those down? I finally got one.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, we all have our standard tools, the stuff that, you know, the regular stuff. But then you always, like I was telling this to Mike, the shop, and even Derek, I said, then you got your specialty stuff. And the guy's tools are really defined by the specialty tools. Because everybody's got the regular stuff. But when you need a guy that's got that one weird socket or the, you know, and they always come looking at me like, hey, do you got one? I'm like, yes, I do. And then you better put it back when you're done with it, you know?
Or the guy that's got 6 11/32nd deep sockets that he has no use for whatsoever. I got 6 of them.
Right, right, right.
Well, you know how many proto AutoZone sockets I had that have been machined?
Yes, yes.
In the lathe,
sure.
Welded to other things.
I was just showing Kevin last night on the G bodies, you know, the Grand Nationals, those rear ends, the wheel cylinders. There's a little bit of a story here. Instead of GM using the standard 2/4-20 bolts through the back of the backing plate to the wheel cylinder, in those years, in the late 80s, they went with this, it's like a wave washer that's kind of bent, and you have to push it over the wheel cylinder, and to get it on is a real pain in the neck. But then bleed the brakes, the bleeder is like recessed. So I said, I'm going to find a better way. None of my bleeding wrenches fit. So I found, what size is the socket? It may be I don't even think it's 5/16. But I found an old Proto Deep 5/16 that fit right into the box end of a wrench, an old wrench. And I'm going to weld those suckers together, I'm going to cut a slot in that socket, and that's going to be my G-body brake bleeding wrench.
That's it. Box full of that stuff. Well, we share that. Me and Ray share that all the time. Hey, check out this wrench.
Right. Oh, Chris, you've got the best stuff in the world. I saved those pictures. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got some wacky ones. But I tell you,
tools.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you have a machine shop and a welder and everything, you can do anything. But right. I've had to make all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But, you know, some stuff I don't share. Sometimes I haven't had time to really share too much stuff. I've been really too busy.
I know. You've been quiet, but I figure that's good. It's a good thing. You know, making money,
it's a lot of work.
I know.
To post stuff and everything. I don't know how some people do it. They just got all the time in the world.
And you were on a roll there for a while. You really were putting a lot of content up, but hey, you know, it's too busy.
Yeah, too busy with the heat and everything.
Right, right.
And then after the poison ivy incident, I was really whacked out on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That put me down a few days. You know, me getting jammed up for a couple of days jams me up like for a week and a half in the shop.
That's a problem, yes.
Right.
It's just because I got that much work.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we get new machines, too. We're swapping machines around.
Which machine?
Well, we sold the CNC machine, one of them, and we upgraded a bridge port. So we got a new bridge port. It's beautiful.
Oh, nice.
And
what kind of
it's
machine?
A two-horse.
What are we talking about here?
CNC. What kind of
machine? A milling machine. A CNC.
Oh, a milling machine.
CNC
made
for 3-axis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to Honduras.
Okay.
But the guy came in, he bought our old bridge port and a lathe, and then we're upgrading to a new bridge port and a better lathe. And all the years I had that one bridge port, it finally wore it out. It was getting pretty bad, you know.
Oh, wow.
And nice new bridge port, all scraped, chrome waves, you know, it makes a huge difference, you know, when you upgrade and you get something that's fresh and tight and all that stuff, you know. But the guy who delivered the bridge port is Peter Galis. He's an old rigger that has rigged machines on Long Island for the longest time. Guy's been he's been around for like 30 years.
Yeah, how to see Chris's face when you said that.
What? Rigger.
We'll talk about it later. Yeah, I know. But you had to see his face.
We got to pay attention on this show.
He said, what?
Yeah. No, he's been around. He's got the same old truck, the same old forklift. This guy's been around for so long. But he not only does he rig the machines, he also refreshes the machines. He knows how to scrape ways and rebuild the bridge ports. The heads on them and everything. That's last of the Mohicans right there.
Well, let me ask you, does his truck have Falcon tires on it?
I will send you pictures. It probably does. I don't know. The thing leaks. First of all,
but listen, he can't have two. He's got to have four Falcon tires on that truck.
Oh, boy, stop it.
I had to chase him around with a bag of Speedy Dry. His parking lot's a mess right now. Forklift leaks. His truck leaks. But right. It's an old Ford 8000 bed or something. It's what a setup.
Wow. That's
yeah,
cool.
I'll send you a picture of it.
Yeah,
but
do that. Do that.
Pretty cool to see the old timers still out there. So
yes.
You know,
exactly.
It's almost like what our good old friend Ron Fine.
Yeah, good old Ron. God bless his soul. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Last of the Mohicans there are now. Yeah. You know who's around for blasting equipment right now. But anyway, I'll let you guys go.
All right, Christian. But thanks for the call.
All right, my brother.
8, 10, 12 people.
Got it. 8, 10, 12. Yes, sir. You got
11
it.
Is 7/16. 14 is 9/16.
Right,
you
know, you're right.
Lost there.
You know what I did? I actually typed all that out in Word, printed it, and put it in the thing, and I hung it on the toolbox so I could, until I learned, and I told the other guys, go look at that. It's a chart. You'll see.
Use your index finger. It never lies.
Yeah. Jeez. All right, guys. I'll see you later.
All right, Christian.
Take care.
So long.
516-572-7440 is the phone number.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm very glad we're able to see each other on video.
Yeah, I was glad I was able to see you.
It's 516-572-7440. Call us. I got a question. Not to go off the subject here of metric and SAE sizes of wrenches and sockets, but I got to ask you a question about an electric motor.
Okay.
And you're the only person that I can talk to about this because my wife falls asleep in mid-sentence. I have the headlight door motor on the Chrysler.
Uh-huh.
Now, the way it's hooked up, it's got power to both sides of it.
Right.
And it's got basically, like, I guess you can say common ground. So what you can do is you unplug it. You can, with a single power source tapped off the positive side of the battery, you can plug into one side of the motor and it will roll the doors open. And then you unplug it and go to the other side of the plug and it should roll the motor. The motor should roll the doors down because here's what it does. You can turn on the light switch and the doors will open. The automatic headlight doors will open. And the lights will come on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to turn the lights off, the door does not close. The lights go off, but the door doesn't come down.
Mm-hmm.
The barn doors do not shut.
Hmm.
So, garage doors, I should say, because that's the way it moves. So I go and pull the plug. I check one side, and the doors open. And then I go to check the other side, and it shorts.
What is it? Oh. Okay.
You get like a sparking.
Okay.
It does not. So I'm wondering, just off the top of your head, do I have to take this thing apart and get a new armature for it? Is the armature bad?
Well, I would look at the motor. I'd want to see what's going on. Because the motor can reverse. It's like a drill. It can reverse.
It has to reverse, yes.
Right. It doesn't care which way it goes. So it could be that in that reverse direction. I'm trying to think because you would have – it is going to be an armature-style motor because it's older.
It is an armature-style motor. Armature worm gear. It's almost like a – it almost has the look of an older-style power window motor.
Yeah. I'm sure because it's all – that's what they used back then.
Right. And that's – but it's not – it doesn't – it's not a power window motor. It has that style. It's a very – intensely built motor. It's very strong type. It's not,
you know, John has a good point. He's that it should run through. There should be a relay to power that motor. But I don't. There is. Okay. Well,
and it works. It all works.
The thing to do. Okay. The thing I would do is, and I will look into this. I want to see a schematic because if, you know, the relay could switch either terminal, like probably 87 and 87A is what it's doing. That's probably what it's doing. Well,
and the funny thing is, this is what happened. Like I said, turn the headlights on, doors open, turn it off, and they don't close.
Well,
so I just isolated the motor before I went into the circuitry. I isolated the motor, and I found that the problem is in the motor. It's not in the circuitry from the headlight switch to the relay to the motor. It's not into that.
So
it's the motor.
So you kind of answered your own question. I think I would take that motor out, and is it take apartable?
Not really.
That's a technical
term.
That's
the problem. It's got a, it's almost, you know, those old style, they almost look like they poured wax over from where the wires.
Potting compound.
Potting. Yes. Thank you. Well, that's what it looks like.
Okay.
The older style. So do I have to get a heat gun for this thing and heat it? And
like
I'm opening up some sarcophagus of some sort?
A good friend, Pirate Paul, I know, he did this with Harley Davidson voltage regulators where he unpotted them, melted all the potting out to change the circuitry to actually change the characteristics of the regulator so it would charge better, and then repotted it. But that's Paul.
Ooh.
Paul will do stuff like that. the potting is going to be by the wires. Is there an end cap that can come off? No, it's sealed.
It's pretty sealed.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty sealed. I know. It's one of those. When I first got the car, of course the motor didn't work. And what I did was I actually took the motor out. And I love when you look at your phone and laugh.
Well, John just said, he just gave you the witch slap on the head. He said, just buy a freaking new motor. And he said, no, you got
you can't.
He said, you got a Falcon motor.
You can't.
And I think he's
right. You can't. I've actually looked for this power window motor. It is so unique because you would think, oh, I could buy the same motor from like a charger or something.
Right,
No. Chargers use a different design. They use a motor per door, per hidden headlight door. The Chrysler uses one motor that runs a rod that operates both doors simultaneously.
Yeah, so it takes a lot
of load. Very unique. And every one I've seen, I've only seen a handful of these junk C-bodies, every one of them with hidden headlights, the motor's gone.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's see what else is gone. Let's go to the phone and go to the fun and say hi. You're out with the Motor Mouths.
How you doing? Love the show. Just wanted to say back once upon a time I had a 64.5 Mustang.
Okay. Who are we speaking to, by the way? Who are you?
I'm sorry, Tom Miggs from Massapequa.
Oh, good. Tom,
hey,
nice to meet you. Good.
Nice to meet you. Well, I had a 64.5 Mustang with a straight six 170.
Right.
Okay. And what they called the lightweight 3-speed tranny, which was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had the tranny out about 12 times. And the bolt on it was an 11 millimeter, which I only had one of in my suit.
Come on.
Wow. In 64, really?
Really?
64.5 was the first edition Mustang, yes.
Yeah, wow.
It's before they had the straight six 200.
That is crazy.
And my kit, it only had one 11 millimeter, which I split the first time I used it, and then had to try to get the Sears with the car up on blocks, had to get a ride to Sears to get a new socket to be able to continue taking out the transmission.
Wow, that is crazy. Who would ever think? Yeah.
Wow. Who would think that they would be using
original or not?
Well, you didn't have the car since new, so anybody could have.
No.
But still, if it's an 11-millimeter head, that means it was a metric thread, which shouldn't have really made it into the American threads. So who knows? I mean, somebody could have even thrown a tap through there. You don't know anything could happen.
Sure.
Honestly, no idea. But, yeah, it was 11, and it was the only socket I had that size.
Wow. Whatever happened to that car, Tom?
It eventually just could never get the transmission fixed. I couldn't get a main shaft. Wow. And it went to a Mustang restoration guy who was going to part it and use what he could.
Oh, wow. That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did pick up a beautiful heavyweight 3-speed that someone gave to me, and I had a new drive shaft made, but I was never able to get a bell housing because I don't know if that tranny was ever supposed to go to that motor.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of an indigenous trannies and motors. You can swap that stuff all day long. I mean, I did it all my life. I put transmissions in motors and cars that didn't belong together. I'm still driving them like that.
<It's> like,
So that's
still
not,
have a couple.
Yeah, that's not really the worst of it. That was the beauty of the hobby where you learned that, I learned a long time ago dealing with a Pontiac that, hey, I couldn't get clutch linkage back in the late 70s. But if I went to the dealer that was still around, I could get Chevelle parts that fit right into the Pontiac. It was an A-body, so you know.
Sure.
Okay.
Again, just using the parts books to kind of, you know, to work the magic. Yeah.
So, yeah, and there was a Mustang place once in Belmore. I don't remember what it was off of, but they had a lot of old parts. I was able to get a lot from them, but again, I was never able to mate that lightweight, I mean, the heavyweight three-speed that I did get with the 170. So right. That was the end of that.
Yeah. Well, like you said, if the bell housing is wrong, then, I mean, it's not going to work.
Well, then, you know, Tom, the natural choice now, the path is to yank that 170 out of there and go find a 289 and drop it in.
Or, well, yeah, that'd be nice.
Something along those lines, or, you know, a nice small V8.
Sure.
And then,
if I knew enough at the time, yeah, that would have been next.
You have anything in the garage or in the stable currently that you're working on?
Honestly, nothing I'm working on. Now I have a nice and clean 2004 BMW motorcycle that never needs anything.
Nice.
And that's pretty much the end of it.
What model BMW?
R1100S.
Okay, good. I'm a K-bike guy. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, love the Ks.
Yeah. Got the other side of it. Nice. Okay, very good. Well, hey, as long as you're doing something wrenching, that's all that matters. You got to keep that going. Very cool.
Yep. Always try to keep your, a little dirt under your fingernails.
Yes, sir. All right, Tom. Well, thanks for calling and welcome to the show. Always feel free to call back and join in on the fun.
Thank you. Really enjoy the show. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks. So long.
Thanks, Tom.
Take care.
All right.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, nice. A new call. We haven't had one of those in a while. So it is the bottom of the hour. And that does mean that we are going to have a bottom of the hour break. But do we have that voodoo that you do so well?
Yes, if only I could remember where I put it. Oh, no, we do. It's the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. That's right, gang. That classic time that we have right here at the bottom of every hour at Motormouth Radio. If you travel regularly with a full array of tools in your trunk, you are part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. Not like with a box truck like Matt Goman Brian or a full bank of scanners like Joe D does. No, they're in the business. No, I'm talking about regular civilians like you and I with a full complete set of tools at the ready in your trunk. With what you carry around every day, can you change a flywheel? Can you rebuild a front end? Can you balance and blueprint an engine? Well, if you pride yourself on attempting to do any of those things from the trunk of your car, then you are part of the Motormouth Radio on Group of the Hour, and as long as you don't forget the Gojo, there you go.
You haven't been up to the UD lately. Those guys have everything they need everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Cool stuff.
I haven't been there in a while, but I'm sure it definitely looks like Thunderdome.
Yeah, it is. It is. Last time I was at
Mad Max.
Johnny disappeared and came back with these two scanners, OBD1 scanners that I used on the Buick. He's like, here, take these. We don't use them. I'm like, all right. Wow, good. So
bring those back. Take these mid-80s scanners.
Yeah.
They're too driven
right
water driven. Here, take all this nasty stuff that warms up. Sure, we don't need it.
Yeah, so I always say with something like that, so hey, what are you gonna do, right? What you gonna do?
No, you so, take it, that's for sure. I believe that.
So what are we gonna do? We're gonna take our break right now. We'll be back with more Motormouth Radio with Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer right here on 90.3 WHPC. What you gonna do?
You're listening to the Motormouth.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Motormouth! You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
Now hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Motormouth!
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evinrude.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming. I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, this is why I call wrong number by accident. I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
So I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motor Mouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motor Mouth! This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440. And all
at once, you're ready to hang it up. So, back with Motor Mouth Radio, Chris, what are you going to
do? Yes.
What you going to do?
Pablo Cruz. Yes. Hey, come on. If you're looking for a show with character, or you're looking for a show with professionalism or accurate subject matter, you've come to the wrong place.
Where can I find that?
What you gonna do? Go find it at another radio station.
We gotta look
another radio show. This is Motor Mouth Radio.
Yes, we wing it as good as anyone else.
So I went and I think I told you I'm in the process of trying to eliminate all of the excess fluids that I have sitting on my languishing on my shelf.
Right, you talked about that last week.
Yes, I have a boatload of it sitting there. So are we going to be talking about that, or what are we going to be doing?
Well, we're going to see who's on the line. We'll go to the phones and say
let's
hi.
Do that.
You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Motor Mouths, me Rob. How you doing?
What's up, Rob?
Robert.
Well,
how are you, sir?
Yes. Well, I'm doing great yourselves.
Not bad.
Keep that
not
trouble.
Not bad. You know. So you want to talk about metric things showing up in the weirdest places, right? Model A Ford, great American car, right?
Tell us about your tools, Rob.
I'm going to tell you about my tool.
Yes, thank you. Tell us about your tools, Rob.
As it ends up, the 1928 to 31 Model A Ford. You're a funny guy, Chris. There you go.
Thanks,
the 28 to 31 Model A Ford has a Zenith carburetor. And
this
the Zenith
does.
Carburetor is a French made carburetor, right? So the main jet on those things are M5 by 0.75 thread.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire carburetor, you know, it's pretty much all standard stuff except for the main jet. So when you're working on those and you have to go and clean up the threads, you know, you can't use the associated, you know, SAE tap. You'll ruin the carburetor body. So it's one of those unusual things you would never think that something that old from the 20s and the 30s, early 30s, would be metric on an American car. But that's the only thing on the Model A Ford that's metric.
That's wild.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Rob, I was thinking of you this week. Thursday, myself and my cousin, we went to go to a car show, and there's a guy up the road from me that has a collection of Model A's, 28 to 31. And, of course, we're on the road. He has a Camaro. I had the Chrysler. And we were just bopping along down this two-laner. And he pulled out in front of us with a Model A coupe, like a two-door sedan, I guess you can call it, pulls out in front of us. And now we're thinking to ourselves, oh, this is going to be a nice, leisurely trip up this road because it's only a two-laner, and we got a Model A in front of us. Oh, no.
Sure.
This, and it was a stock car. It wasn't like it was rotted or anything. This guy takes off like a shot. Bang! He's going up this road. It's almost like he's hitting the hills and leaving the ground with this car, Rob. He's flying. We're trying to catch up to him.
Wow.
You knew we were all going to the same place because it's a small town.
Mm,
we were all going to the same place, and he was just rocketing with this thing. So my question to you is, how fast does that car go?
Well, you can get a stock Model A. It depends on, you know, how well the motor runs. But Yeah, I've had my Model A, you know, with the fresh rebuilt motor, a stock rebuild. Yeah. I've had it up to like 62, 63, something like that.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And actually, it's funny. Well, you don't want to go that fast.
Let me ask you something. Rob, do you have an overdrive in your car?
No, I do not.
Okay, because I drove with Gary, Gary, and his Model A, it was like 45, 50 with the tailwind, and he was jonesing to put the overdrive in so he could actually go a little faster. So I guess.
Well, here's the thing. You know, with Model A, the first thing you have to consider is the condition of the steering box. The early steering boxes were a 7-tooth sector box, and they're very sloppy. Even you know, rebuilt, they're still a little bit questionable. The 2-tooth sector, which was used, I think it was like early 29 through end of build, they were a superior steering box, although they were not a recirculating ball box. What people do is they use something called a Mitchell overdrive. It replaces the torque tube. Mm. The overdrive sits like midship in the torque tube, and it gives you a 26% overdrive. And what guys do, and I'm wondering if your friend there with the Model A maybe had one of those, Chris, because
could have
been. Yeah, because what happens is that you get actually like an extra, you know, two gears. But here's the thing is that the range between second and third in a Model A is very wide. So you're going from a high revving second until all of a sudden direct drive and it dogs down. And especially if you're climbing a hill, it's very burdensome on the engine, especially an engine which is like a stock Babbitt motor. You're hammering the crap out of the Babbitt bearings. So the Mitchell overdrive, what's really good about that is once you leave second, the hot trick is to go and pop it into overdrive, which is somewhere between second and third. So now you have like that additional gear between second and third, which is still pretty good for hill climbing. And then once you're up in the RPMs, you drop it into third and you kick it back into, you know, regular drive. So now you're in third, and then you go one more time into overdrive, and now you have your extra gear after third.
What you're saying is you need better babbling Babbitts in a better box.
There you go.
Babblingly, yes.
That's kind of
here's the thing, though, is that your friend might have also had under the hood. He might have had a touring engine built for touring, and what they do is there is they go and they replace the Babbitt bearings with you know shell bearings. They recut the block to go and put the shell bearings in, and then
so those are better babbling.
There's just no babbling about it, and then. And then what they do is they put in a Lighton flywheel. The Lighton flywheel, they cut about 30 pounds off the flywheel, and they put a V8 clutch in. The V8 clutch gives you better pedal action. It's a little bit softer on your foot rather than having to have, you know, working out your left foot. And the Lighton flywheel allows the RPM to come up a lot faster, you know. As a matter of fact, the early hot rodders, they used to go and use the early 28 Model A's like mine have a multi-disc clutch. The clutch is only about 6-inch diameter. So between lightening that style of flywheel and the low rotating mass, you know, the low moment of inertia on that type of system, the RPMs on those motors come up really fast, you know, faster than the lightened V8 clutches. So, you know, it all depends on what your flavor is. But your friend there could have had a combination of a couple of things. Lightened flywheel, V8 clutch, and overdrive, yeah. Because you could really get those things to go fast.
Yeah, we ended up going to the same place, and we were talking to him. His name was Tom. He was a nice guy. He popped the hood on the car, you know, flipped the hood up, and it was bone stock. I mean, but like you say, those modifications, I'm sure, couldn't be easily seen.
Especially the modified bearings, et cetera, the light flywheel, all that. All right.
No, the casual view would not.
Here's the giveaway. The giveaway for the overdrive. Did he have two shifters in the car?
I didn't notice. We were just looking at the engine. We didn't look inside.
Yeah, because the second shifter would be located right behind the stock shifter. And the nice thing about the Mitchell overdrive is that it's a synchronized overdrive. So, you know, you don't have the double clutch when you're going at the overdrive or coming out of overdrive. You just pop it right in and out. So it just makes it that much easier to drive.
Oh, it's always
easy. And some people, what they do is they go and they... Some people, they go and they pull out the Model A transmission altogether, and they go and they put in a T5 5-speed. There's a conversion kit for that, too.
Oh, wow.
So now you have a fully synchronized 5-speed. Oh, yeah. It makes the car a dream to drive with a stock motor. you know?
Sure.
So who knows? Yeah, and it looks fairly stock, too. Yeah.
Good.
So,
all right,
combination of things.
Thanks for the Model A history lesson.
Yes, Rob. Thank you.
Somebody
you
needs to know that, so that's good.
And for other current technology, go to our website.
Yeah. All right, Rob.
One more thing to report. The Mustang engine transmission, mechanically, everything's back together. Now I'm just buttoning up the body, and I think by spring I'll be sending it out for paint. And then we'll put the interior in, and we should be done by next spring. Wife is excited.
Nice.
She drove the car down the driveway.
Beautiful. That's good. Good news.
Yes.
Good news.
It is good news. It's a milestone, actually.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, you have a great day. I got to get back to it. I got a lot of stuff happening in the garage here.
Thanks, Rob.
Already.
All right.
Thank you, my
gentlemen.
Brother. Always a pleasure.
So long.
Okay.
Be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
516-572-7440. The phones are on fire, and if they're not on fire yet, they will be. We have another 15 minutes left of the show.
Making up for lost time, yeah.
So, yes, exactly. So, what was I saying? I don't remember. Oh, yeah. I don't recall. Oh, yeah. I actually did a drain and a fill on my LeBaron.
Of what?
On the transmission.
Okay.
And did a filter and just drained it. And I found that I read up on it, and it stated that you will lose about 4 quarts of transmission fluid, basically.
About right, yeah.
So I put the pan under there, dropped the pan, I put a catch pan under. I get about 4 quarts. So I noticed that I only had about 3 quarts. So I said, all right, let me just go to the store and go buy another quart of transmission fluid. So I go over to, I had to go to an AutoZone because an AutoZone had dyno transmission fluid. It wasn't synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the Advanced up the road from me that had only synthetic transmission fluid. And I was a little afraid because I'm thinking to myself, this car takes an ATF plus 4.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's no synthetic transmission fluid in there, so I couldn't go to Advanced.
I was going to say, you know, usually it's they refer to that as dyno fluid as of
dyno,
and it's synthetique.
Synthetique, yes,
that's right. It's Motormouth Radio. We have to use the right vernacular here.
That's right, synthetique transmission fluid. Yes, to our French listeners,
right?
So that's what I did. Went over and got another quart of oil. Now I had a total of 4. So, of course, I drained it out. Now, what I do is I put it in containers that have markings on them so I know exactly how much transmission fluid I'm taking out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. Now, of course, I let it sit and drain. Mm-hmm. And I go in the house and I let it sit overnight. I just want all of it possible to drain.
You want every last drop, don't you?
I want every last drop out of this as I can. So, of course, I come back the next day and the pan is almost full at this point. I let it drain overnight.
Yeah.
So now I take that and I drop it into those canisters. And now I have close to 6 quarts of transmission fluid, actually over 6 quarts of transmission fluid. So back to the store I go to get 2 more quarts and come back. And do you know how much transmission fluid has gone up in the last couple of years? And I was like in shock when I saw this. ATF plus 4 at the AutoZone was $10 a quart.
Wow.
I'm like, where have I been?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, last jobs I did was when I serviced the FJ and the RAV4. And I bought it through Walmart online. They, you know, everybody knows Walmart's a great place to go buy oil, great prices on name brand oils.
Yes.
And a lot of the experts agree that SuperTech products are actually just as good or the same as the name brands, but that's for that's another topic of discussion. But Mike Jr. turned me on to this that he bought fluids at Walmart online, and it's free delivery. So they say, you know, he bought like 4 gallons of brake fluid and training fluid and oil. And I did the same thing. I bought the stuff online, had it delivered.
Good
for
you.
And I don't think I paid that much. I think I got a little bit of a better deal. But yeah, I guess now maybe things have changed. It could be.
Right. And of course, you're going to get hit with a delivery charge that's going to basically ruin the value of the product, whatever it is, like, because I'm sure there are still stores that will sell it online for $5 or $6 a quart, but then they're going to charge you $20 to deliver it, and there goes your savings.
You have to look, because like I said, Walmart had free delivery. So I did get it for free delivery. And it might have been a price point. It might have been free delivery over $50, something like that. But, you know, right. I exceeded that because I bought a bunch of stuff.
But you are right about Walmart's fluid prices, because you can go to the Walmart up by me and any day of the week and their SuperTech brand oil is always gone.
I've noticed that too, yeah.
It's off the shelf, mm-hmm. gone.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many times where I'd have to spend a buck more mm-hmm. or $2 more for whatever name brand, because I'm shooting for the SuperTech.
Right. Well,
and of course it flies off the shelves.
You know, just to reiterate the story, I've told this to people many times. We had a fellow on the show, not the guy who did the oil tester that I have. What the hell's the name of that thing?
Oh, the Lubricheck?
Not the Lubricheck guy. It was another guy who worked at an oil testing laboratory. We had him on years ago. And what that does is you send away for the kit, you pay a fee for how many tests you want to have done, and they send you test tubes and whatever, and you take an oil sample out of your engine, put it in a test tube, and you send it away, and they'll tell you
tell you if your car is pregnant or not.
Well, right, exactly. And he said at the end of the show, we kind of pulled him down and asked him what he used, and he used SuperTech oil in his car.
Right, he did. Yeah, almost sheepishly, if I remember correctly.
So let's go to the phones and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, guys. Happy day.
Hey.
How are you guys doing?
What's happening, Cliff?
How you doing?
What's doing, Cliff?
You're right. Good. All good. I'm catching the end of the show, unfortunately. I'll have to catch up on the beginning of the show tomorrow on reruns. But,
yeah, you didn't miss much.
I hear you talking about oils. And I wanted to know your thoughts on that. I've been watching a couple of videos, and I'm not giving any of these guys plugs, but there's one guy in particular. He talks about using Shell Rotella diesel oil in regular, like even race motors and gas motors, claiming that it still has a lot of the, I guess, stuff. He calls them like the dinosaur stuff.
Right.
That some of these old motors could use. I don't know if you guys have heard that. Or
yeah, that's the zinc additive, and that was very, very popular a couple of years ago. Everybody was using Rotella. I was almost going to do it, and then the oil started coming out with the high zinc, the ZDDP additive. So I have not used Rotella myself, but I do know people who have. And, you know, I haven't looked into that further lately to see what the current thoughts on it are, but I know that definitely was a thing.
And it's basically marked, you know, I guess that stuff is marked for diesel, but yeah. They're saying it's good to use in regular gas engine. I don't know what would be
the difference
in what you're using in diesel over gas, or I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's the ash and the zinc content really is what you need for the older engines. That's what you need. The base oil is the same, but it's the additive package that's different. So,
right. Yep.
Yeah, and I wouldn't see it doing any damage. Yeah,
I was listening, Chris. I was listening to you talk about some of the synthetic stuff, and a lot of the guys, I guess you kind of touched on it. The mindset is sometimes like you put some of this synthetic in some of these, you know, old cars with maybe some older seals, and I don't know if it's a myth, but they say sometimes all of a sudden you could develop some leaks, and now you're burning oils compared to like some, you know, regular, you know, mm-hmm. traditional conventional oil. Or is that a myth? I don't know.
Yeah, you know? I would tell you the truth. I wouldn't use synthetic in an older car, but that's just me personally.
I do. And I'd say something.
Ray's got more guts than I do.
I even watched a video from a trusted source where the question was whether to use high zinc formulated motor oil like we can buy, which is a little expensive, or to use the zinc additive into a regular, you know, a standard oil that doesn't have zinc. And I'll tell you something. I've seen that the body is split. There are people and engine builders who swear to just dump the zinc additive in and on top oil, and other guys say, no, don't do that. Other engine, so the body is out, and I don't know who's going to be the actual real arbiter of that argument. I don't know.
So what do you think about also, I know like I have a friend that swears by this purple oil. I've never tried it.
Which oil? Did you say Royal Purple?
He calls it like is it Royal Purple? Yeah, Royal Purple.
Well, Purple Royal Purple is a brand, and it's a very good, it's a premium brand. It's a very good one, in fact.
Yeah, he spends a lot of money for it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I truthfully, I use Brad Penn oil in my older car, And what it is, it's the old Kendall oil. It's that greenish color. Yeah. But it's got high zinc. It's out of Pennsylvania, and it does have high zinc in it.
Where do you find that, Ray? You find it local? Or?
Actually, I didn't see it local. I was buying it online. Yeah, I get it online.
Okay. I'm going to try that in the Roadrunner next time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the truth, Cliff. I just use regular SuperTech in the 383, and it's been fine. It is really, it has been. I've been using it. I don't use like an engine cleaner, an internal engine cleaner, because I don't know what kind of sludge is in this engine since I purchased the car sat for 30 years. So what I'm doing is I'm just using the SuperTech and just running it every 2,000 to 3,000 miles if it ever gets that high, and then dumping it out.
You know, Christian said that Merkel sells Joe Gibbs oil is another one that's very popular. And he said SK sells the Brad Penn and the so they're around. But and I know that even at my local auto parts store, they sell Valvoline. It's Valvoline racing oil, and it is a high ZDDP oil.
Oh, wow.
So that's
so basically, just look for the zinc, right? Are you saying look for something with a good zinc content, and should be good to go.
Exactly.
All right, man.
Yes.
All right, fellas. Thank you so much.
All right, Cliff. Thanks for the call, brother.
Talk to you.
Thank you, Cliff. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Have a good one, guys.
So long.
Safe.
All right. That's our buddy Cliff.
We still have time. 516-572-7440. So, yeah. So it was going through the motions and paying the $10 a quart and dumping it in there. And I got a little more than 6 quarts out of there. And now I'm in the process of what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the danger drive like we always talk about.
Right.
And after the show, I'm going to spend the day with the car and I'm just going to just go driving it around. I'm going to put it on the highway and I want to see what the transmission fluid does with this transmission.
Okay.
Because I don't know. And I would hate to go through that ordeal that I went through with that old Lincoln where I get it on the highway after doing a transmission dump and fill and then finding that the car drops out of high gear like my old Lincoln did.
Right.
And then I have to go put the old fluid back into the transmission of that old Lincoln because that was the only thing holding the transmission together and then eventually selling the car. But I'm hoping that that's not going to happen. I don't think it is because this car has only got like 77,000 miles on it. And it looks like the transmission was serviced, like you said, right? I sent you a picture and you said that you saw the same thing I did, that the oil looked pretty good.
They just made a gasket out of they didn't buy a gasket. Yeah, they used
someone. Who does this? Why do people make they don't use a gasket? I mean, for crying out loud. And not only that, you could tell that they put the goop on there. It looked like this bubblegum goop.
Yeah.
They put the pan on right after they put the goop on. So they didn't give it a like 10 minutes to cure, to tighten up.
To skin,
To skin, yeah. And then you could tell they put, because it was all goop pushed out of the corners and that the bolts were tightened down to like 150 foot-pounds. I had my heart in my mouth taking that pan down because every time I leaned on that bolt to break it free, I was like, oh, please don't snap the transmission body, please.
It probably means they also didn't buy a filter and gasket kit, so they probably never changed the filter. Because if they changed the filter, they would have had the gasket. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I ordered one from Rock Auto, it got delivered, and it was fine.
Yeah.
And it was like $15 delivered to the door. I was like, who can beat this?
All right.
So and yeah, got a good filter, got a good gasket. It was great.
I tell you what else is fine. It's time to get out of here. Kim's going to come in and do Thunder Road, so stay tuned for that. And we're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week with more fun and frivolity. And Chris, what do we always say to people who are, the throngs of people who are outside the studio?
Don't follow us home and watch your tools.
Exactly. We'll be back with more next week. Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Motormouth Radio. We'll see you then.
See you, bye.
All right. So long.